Hello and welcome to another episode of Dez and Marco.
I'm Dez.
And I'm Marco. How are you, Dez?
Not too bad. I was kind of telling you before I had a mini technological emergency, which might be inspiration for a future episode because we love tech, we love beer, and we love conversation. Other than that, I'm fine. How about you?
Good. Curious to hear about that. I will tell you about my technological mishap in a second. But first, you mentioned beer. So what are you going with?
This was really at the back of my cupboard. I'm hoping it's still in date because I've known to be drinking beers which are out of date. It's from a brewery which I think we've tried before. Buxton Brewery in England somewhere.
Yeah, I remember them.
Yeah, so it's an IPA and it's called Ace Edge. No fancy descriptions, I just think it's... here we go. This is our Sorachi Ace special edition of our flagship IPA Axe Edge. Still relentlessly hoppy. So, there you go. A hoppy IPA. How about you?
Right, so I picked a beer. It's called IPA, so that gives away what kind of beer it is. From a brewery called Big Mountain Brewery, because they are from Chamonix. So at the foot of the Alps, or in the Alps, actually. So just under Mont Blanc. They have allegedly won, or this beer has won gold at the World Beer Awards in 2019. I have no idea what they are. But anyway, it's a IPA from France.
Cheers.
Cheers. Speaking of technological mishaps, you remember a couple of weeks ago or a couple of episodes ago, we talked about Van Moof, the yes. most fun, well-funded or the most funded bicycle company or e-bike company in the universe, and how it went bankrupt. And we were talking about how their bikes are extremely customized and all of the parts are custom made. So they're not some off-the-shelf parts by bike part producers, and what happens when these bikes stop working. And so, because they tend to do all of their maintenance, and so every time something broke, even if it was a flat tire, you had to go to Van Moof to get it fixed.
Correct.
Right. So I was riding to dinner the other day, and my super fancy automatic transmission stopped working.
No.
And this is what? I think they went bankrupt at the beginning of August, or maybe end of July. And it is now the end of August when we're recording this. And so my bike was stuck in third gear out of four. So it was okay because you could use the electric power to assist you.
Yeah.
From 0 to 15 kilometers per hour, which helps because it was really difficult. And then you just had to pedal a little bit faster to stay at the 25 kilometer per hour speed limit. But then I was like, okay, this sucks. Bike still works. I can still use it. Then I was biking somewhere else and it went down a gear. And now it's stuck in second gear, which means that I can either go very slow or nothing. And there's like a very worrying rattling noise coming from the gear. So I went to the internet to see what I can do or whether I can get someone to fix it. For days, I didn't find anything until I found a company called Upway, which apparently they sell you refurbished e-bikes from any brand except Van Moof. They don't do those anymore, but they opened a Van Moof repair program that you sign up for. And then for 89 euro, which is really annoying, they come to your place, pick up your bike, take it to their shop, analyze it or see what's wrong with it, and then tell you if they can fix it. And then they send you like an offer for replacement parts if needed. The work, like the handyman's work or whatever it's called, is free, but you have to pay for the parts. So I don't really know how much a gearbox would be. Then if you accept that quote, they'll repair the bike and send it back to you. The annoying thing is that if they can't fix it, it's still 89 euro. The expense for them to come and pick it up and see what's wrong with it, it's still 89 euro. And I think it's $89 in the US because they operate in a few countries like US, UK, Netherlands, Germany, and maybe France. But the good thing is, if they can't fix it, they'll make an offer to buy it off of you.
Okay, presumably for like spares.
Yeah, exactly, because then they'll need it for, yeah, to repair other many, many Van Moves lying around. So I don't know. So I signed up. Let's see. I'm still hoping for someone to buy the company so I can go back to the shop and claim my last year of maintenance.
Last I heard, now don't quote me on this, there was a Dutch investment group which was interested in buying it. I don't know the details of that, but again, I think a lot of people are asking to look at their books to see how viable it is as a company.
Yeah, because this company is really expensive, apparently. Yeah, you'll need tens of millions of dollars, euro, whatever, to buy it. And then you're basically buying a number of very angry customers. I mean, I'll keep you posted. Let's see if I can get my bike fixed. But I at least in this solution from Upway, I like the fact that if they can't fix it, I can give them the bike, or, you know, I can get rid of it somehow. Yeah. Which is
it's an interesting company. I might actually look into that because it's a cool concept.
True, exactly. Well, but anyway, many, many episodes ago, we promised you, our dear listener, a review of the highly acclaimed and highly anticipated Tears of the Kingdom, which has now been out for like 3-4 months. Here we go. Did you finish the game, by the way?
Nowhere near. Like, literally, like, so far. For several reasons. First of all, I haven't played as much as some people who've, like, taken weeks off work and done this, that, or the other. Yeah. I'm trying to squeeze it in the spare time that I have. On top of that, most games I would be able to finish in, say, 60 hours total, which is would equate to roughly 3 weeks of, you know, me time. But this has just got so much to do. And I get distracted by so many little things in-game. I mean, I don't want to give away any spoilers, but there's 4 major, let's say, dungeons, but they're not really dungeons. 4 main quests on the map that you have to start off with. I've literally just done them, and I need to move to the next stage of the game.
Oh, okay. So I guess in that way, like in the main quest, you're ahead of me because I did 2, and I'm, I guess, halfway through the 3rd one. Well, let's talk about a few things. So this is, as everybody knows, the sequel, and it's a direct sequel to Breath of the Wild, which came out, I think, 2018. And it's, according to many, the best game ever. I'm happy to put it in that category of, like, maybe not the best, but it's pretty damn good.
Hold that thought, because that is something I want to discuss. I'll just park it to the side, but I agree with you. There was some criticism from people whose sort of mentality I don't share. The biggest criticism, I think, came from hardcore gamers who were kind of saying that it doesn't hold a candle compared to like the latest PS5 games.
And in some aspects, it doesn't. For example, I wanted to talk about graphics. They're great for the Switch. And the Switch is really starting to show its age. Actually, there's rumors that by the end of the year or early next year, Nintendo will come out with a successor to the Switch. But for the moment, the Switch is really old hardware. And even when it came out, it was not high-end. And I think this game really shows it. There's some textures that if you get really close to it, they just look bad. Or they look like a 2013 game or 2010 game or something like that.
But the compromises Nintendo has made, I think, are spot on. Because what you've said is completely correct, and it's textures. So I've noticed it, 2 instances. There are several towers that you need to climb up in the game to sort of unlock areas of the map. When you go really close to like the netting of these towers, you can see it's like a really bad 2D sprite.
Yeah.
But only when you go really up close. The other instance is there's anything is interactable, including like all the mountain ranges, cliff sides. Yeah. And sometimes you'll be climbing on cliffside, which you will be doing a lot. And you can see the rock texture is really like low res poly.
Yeah, true. But at the same time, this game really shows you that it does not matter. No. I wouldn't know what to do, or I wouldn't think 4K graphics would make this game any better. I think it's fine. So the game itself runs great. I don't think, like, I haven't encountered any, like, drop in frames or any slowing down whenever there's a lot going on in the screen. and I think it's just smooth all the time. And overall, what Nintendo did with the vastness of the map and the graphics, I think it's incredible. Like, all the scenery is, like, still awe-inspiring, kind of like they did in the first game. The some of, like, the sunrises or the sunsets are just beautiful. Like, you want to explore it. The game is pretty enough for you to make you want to explore it. And there's always something, kind of like what you mentioned at the beginning, there's always something to distract you with, which I guess is the beauty of this game. But we'll get to gameplay in a second. Overall, yeah, I don't know if I noticed it more this time compared to Breath of the Wild, but I'm not impressed by the graphics.
I just think it's something that you notice if you're looking for it.
Yeah, exactly.
The gameplay is so buttery smooth. Our complaints about these textures up close are really a minimal of instances, because most of the time, like, these mountains will be in the distance and, you know, you're not going to go that close to something. So it doesn't interfere with the gameplay in the slightest. I think everywhere where there needs to be sort of within the Switch's hardware's capabilities, when they can only designate so much high res textures, they've chosen the right places to put them. The style of the game, which is kind of a graphics style, I mean, it's kind of a little bit cel-shaded. It's got its own unique engine, which they built specifically for this game. So the characterizations of the characters, the animations, the movements, from that point of view, there are some AAA games now, today, where the facial animations don't cut the mustard compared to what Nintendo have done. Like, the characters are so fully formed, fully fledged, the sound effects, the speech. I don't know. I honestly can't really improve much. I feel like if Nintendo had slightly more capable hardware, they would have corrected those issues. But as you said, it doesn't matter.
No, and I also realized that because the whole point of the game is basically like, here's a map, do whatever you want in it. There are no limitations, there's no invisible walls, just do whatever you want. And Nintendo added its signature polish to it. It's incredible. I think it's incredible what they did. It's this world is infinite. It's three times bigger than what it was in the previous game. And the game is still, like, overall looks nice, not great, but it's what they did is great.
We touched upon this before. You said it's three times as big. This is where I think maybe something which I personally don't love, but I'm totally okay with it. I spend most of my time on the main map, i.e. the land of Hyrule. And it's the same carried over from Breath of the Wild, with a few evolutions, because obviously events have transpired in between the two games. The other level is the sky levels, the sky islands. And it makes sense in the context of the story. A story which I'm not fully following, but that's something we can touch upon in a second. And then included in this is the underworld, which you talked about, called the Depths. From a polish point of view, from a coding or technical point of view, it's incredible that you can go from, like, the sky right down to the depths without a single loading screen or drop of frame rate.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I kind of feel like I only go to the other places when the story mandates I have to. I don't particularly go around the sky islands exploring. I tend to stick to the ground level.
Okay, that's interesting, because I tend to go to the depths, for example, or I go to the depths a lot because it's fun to explore. And there's always something else to unlock and something more to look for. It's just a little bit more frustrating to navigate there, but that really feels like exploring. Like you mentioned, in the normal world, there's these towers, kind of like in the first game, that you unlock and it kind of unlocks the whole map. And it makes it really easy to spot things in the distance that you want to explore while in the depth. It feels a bit more like an exploration because you don't know where you're going. Everything is dark. All the enemies are just a little bit stronger. So I don't know. I kind of enjoy it. And that's the interesting thing about the gameplay, is that now there's three worlds to explore instead of just the one. I feel also that the new powers are way more fun than the previous ones.
Completely agree. And I was a little bit apprehensive when I first started the game because I didn't want this Zelda to be basically Minecraft in Hyrule.
Fair.
Everyone's seen the videos of people making incredible machines. You don't need to. The experience is such that you can choose to go for things like really direct. Nintendo will always leave the tools to do the job with the minimum amount of effort. But I don't mean that in the in the this is easy sense. I mean that if you don't want to spend time constructing something complex to do a particular task, yeah, Nintendo will give you the tools to kind of make that bit simpler. But if you wanted to indulge in your constructive creativity, Nintendo lets you do that as well.
Yeah. So the two main powers that you have today, there's four, but I honestly can't remember all of them. So the name of all of them. So one of them is Ultra Hand, which allows you to fuse any two things or any two or more things together. For instance, there's wheels lying around all over the place, and you can fuse them to a plank and make a car, or make a boat, or make a plane, or make
a motorcycle.
Yeah, motorcycle. Or you can make all sorts of weird contraptions, which, again, I recommend going to YouTube because some of them are really fun. And then the other one is Fuse, which is much like Ultra Hand. You can fuse things to your weapons or your shields. So you can fuse a diamond to your spear and it makes it way more powerful. Or you can fuse something that you mentioned that there's a lot of climbing involved. But you could fuse a rocket to your shield, and then every time you use your shield, you're propelled into the air, which is a lot of fun, and it really just opens your creativity. And there's hardly ever one way to do something. Basically, however you figure out what you want to do, that's up to you. Like, however you want to play it, it's essentially up to your imagination. In a way, I guess that it is kind of like Minecraft in Hyrule.
But it doesn't have to be. It's up to how you want to do it.
Yeah, true.
Just for completion's sake, the other sort of powers that you have, and I say the next most important mechanic is the rewind feature. Every single object is kind of tracked through time. So at any instance, Link, the character that you play, can sort of freeze time and you can actually like go on an object and send it back in time. So think of sort of rewind feature, which comes in very handy to maybe reach inaccessible places, because if a rock has fallen down from the sky, for example, you could climb on this rock and rewind it so it goes back up.
Or the trick that you taught me, that if an enemy is throwing something at you, you can freeze that and make it rewind so it gets thrown back to the enemy.
Very handy if they're throwing explosives.
Exactly. And then the last power, I cannot remember what it's called.
The auto build.
No, I mean the other one. Well, auto build is one of them where if you've built some kind of thing in the past, you can save it and you can recall it whenever you want, as long as you have the materials. But the other one, which is a little bit weird, is the one that allows you to go through ceilings.
Oh, yeah, the ascend feature.
Ascend, yes, thank you. Which is actually kind of helpful. It's just weird to go through rocks and ceilings.
But it is very handy. I think they introduced this because, as I mentioned before, there's so much climbing in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
That in this one, if there's like an overhang or a room and you just want to go up, it makes things that much faster. But at the same time, they've implemented it in such a way that sometimes it's actually like a puzzle element.
Yeah, true. So these actually five powers make the dungeons or the shrines way more interesting.
Agreed. And I think that's one of the changes I like the most. And they've introduced improvements from Breath of the Wild. Again, if you're not into this game, you might not find this topic particularly interesting. But one of the great elements is that you collect all sorts of resources, food, insects, rocks, minerals, all sorts of things. And one of the elements is that you have to create like potions to make yourself stronger or increase your defense or increase your sneakiness or increase your flame resistance, that sort of thing. And obviously like health potions and potions which will obviously reduce the effects of, you know, damage from certain elements. And so the cooking is a big part of the game.
Yeah.
In the old one, you'd have to kind of memorize what you'd done, whereas now you've got like a recipe book, which makes things much simpler. When you do find these cooking pots and you want to like cook a big batch of things, so you're prepared for the next set of adventures that you're going to go on, it's that much faster. Lots of little life improvements.
And then overall in the gameplay, because there's so much to do, I feel like combat is less of a focus compared to Breath of the Wild. With a big disclaimer, maybe it's because I'm playing it differently. As in Breath of the Wild, I was playing it like a old school Zelda, just going for all the enemies and trying to kill them. While now I'm just avoiding them way more.
But you're not alone. Obviously, it's up to the player how much to engage. And similar to the first Breath of the Wild, if you're skillful enough, you could beeline for the main objective and give it a go. Chances are you're going to be completely underpowered and you will die. The speedrunners, they've obviously skilled enough that they can go immediately and do that. You will come across formidable foes like three-headed dragons, massive one-eyed trolls, all sorts of massive creatures where, as you've mentioned, you know, you're just this little guy with a wooden stick with a mushroom fused at the end of it.
Yeah.
And then you see this massive three-headed dragon with like electricity like all over the place. You don't engage. You know that you're going to die until you power up.
Yeah, true. And honestly, to this day, there's one side mission that where you need to kill one of these dragons, and I haven't done it yet.
I don't blame you. It's scary. I have done it and I've learned how to defeat that particular, the three-headed dragons,
yeah.
But it's still something you don't go in unprepared.
Okay. Then I'll need to talk to you later. But overall, the gameplay is fantastic. The controls are pretty good. One thing worth mentioning is get a pro controller. It just makes it so much better. And I'm not saying it just because I really, really hate the Joy-Cons, but the pro controller is just actually pretty good. You mentioned earlier about the storyline and how you're not really following it. And I agree. It just feels like it doesn't matter. I read some reviews where they said that it's actually not that bad, but I still don't follow it. Like, I really don't care.
So one of the challenges of games of this nature is that it doesn't follow the linear storytelling. You can do whatever you want, and that poses a challenge if you want to tell a story. The way Nintendo have done it, both in Breath of the Wild and sort of replicated here as well, is that as you kind of do certain tasks and there are multiple quests, information is kind of unlocked. And, you know, you're getting snippets of information. Yeah. And as time goes on, you put the whole story together and you start to piece what's happened. I think it's going to be maybe towards endgame that you really understand the full story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you may have unlocked certain storylines or video segments that I haven't. So you'll have different information to what I do.
Yeah, true. So just to give you an idea, the game starts almost few moments after the end of Breath of the Wild, where you've got still all of your powers, all of your weapons, all the hearts, everything. You're exploring the depths with Princess Zelda, and then you run into this bad guy who makes Zelda disappear and takes away all of your powers. So in a way, it's very much like Metroid, where every Metroid game you start with nothing and then you have to build yourself up. Yeah, and that's it. And then you're dropped into the world and said, good luck. Go figure it out.
I might add that the cynical amongst our listeners might point out that every single Zelda game is the same. And they are absolutely correct. And that's because the story doesn't matter. And I don't mean that in the sense that the stories are terrible, but the story is essentially Princess is in danger, Princess being Zelda, and you, Link the hero, has to step up and save the day. But it's always been about the journey, Link's journey from, let's say, humble beginnings to mighty hero.
Yeah.
And this is no different. So you start off, you've lost, and you're back at square one, and you have to basically build your way up into a position where you can actually do something. It's not so much about the story, it's about how you get there.
Yeah, exactly. And how you get there is actually pretty interesting, because it's very difficult to get somewhere when you keep getting distracted all the damn time. So, but it's great. You know what? The only question I have for you on it, and then I know you want to have a little discussion about how good this game is, but the only thing is, do you think it's too much?
A friend of mine who is pretty casual but intense gamer, so I mean this in the sense that, like, Elden Ring came out, for example, and he hadn't played his PlayStation 5 in ages. He bought Elden Ring. He spent 3 solid days just doing that. And then he completed it and he was like, okay, I'm done. And then he went back to being like a normal human being. He loved the previous Zelda. He obviously bought this one in high anticipation.
Yeah.
And he started it and he was like, no, it's too much. It's too much. And he had just kind of finished Elden Ring like a couple of months before. So he said he still hasn't gotten into it. And admittedly, I had that moment at the very beginning where I just had to persevere. Because the introduction period is on these Sky Islands. As we mentioned, there's 5 powers to obtain and explain. And the user has to get used to them. And yeah. Nintendo makes sure that you know how to use them before progressing. So yeah. I would argue that the introductory period is longer than on the previous game, but it's worthwhile. It never feels tedious, but you're fed so much information about the mechanics of the game. Like, you need these batteries, essentially. You've got all these new powers to contend with, and all of a sudden you've got sky islands, the normal land, and then the depths. And on top of that, you've got different things to unlock, like hearts and gloom, and they affect you differently. And I personally think that the pacing of the game is about right. But I can also see how it might be a little bit overwhelming at first. But I have to insist that if you persevere, and even if you ignore some elements of the game, it's still absolutely fine. The game does not punish you.
Yeah, true. I didn't feel like the beginning of the game, the sort of tutorial, was too long or it dragged on for too much. My thing is, I got instantly hooked, instantly addicted, and I played it almost like every day. The good thing about it is that the side missions or the side quests are relatively short, so you can play it casually, as in I would pick it up between when I stopped working and I started making dinner for that half hour or 1 hour. And I could play it either, you know, play just the one quest, which would be like half hour, or play it for an entire afternoon and it would be okay. So that's cool. Like it doesn't take time to get into or anything. And I love that. The thing is, there is so much stuff to do. At one point, I don't know, I feel like I kind of got bored. As in, I haven't played it now for a couple of weeks, or not very regularly. And I feel like, I don't know, like I went on holiday or whatever, and I kind of lost momentum, and now it's difficult for me to get back into it.
I can see that. And I have to admit that every time you kind of feel like, all right, this might be getting a bit repetitive, I went and did like one of the main quests, or I went to a part of the map which I hadn't really, let's say, fully explored. So usually it's quest related because there's kind of like four main segments to the map. So that's kept it fresh for me. I think that's a valid point. And I think this is kind of like a good segue into my next point. We're obviously talking high praise and we could talk about it forever. And we could just go on in circles about every different element of the game, from its design, from its programming, from its polish, from its technical achievements, from its graphics, so many things. You will see much better reviews than what we're able to put into words on multiple other platforms. I think the general consensus is this is a fantastic game. I was having this conversation with a friend of mine, and the question is, does the perfect game exist? Zelda Tears of a Kingdom has been named as some as, oh, it's the perfect game. But, you know, me and you, and we are nitpicking here, we have found a few things to nitpick at. So can a perfect game have any flaw?
Good question. I mean, for example, we talked about the graphics not being perfect, but also we talked about how it doesn't really matter.
My take on this is as follows. I think this has been a particularly good year for gaming. And just recently, you might have heard of a game called Baldur's Gate 3. And this is a sequel to Baldur's Gate 2, which was released in the early 2000s, a game which was made by BioWare. Baldur's Gate 3 is made by a Belgian developer called Larian Studios, which are experts in making RPGs. It's a game based in the world of Dungeons and Dragons, specifically this something called the Forgotten Realms. It has received incredible high praise, and rivaling Tears of the Kingdom in terms of, is this the perfect game? Obviously for that genre.
Yeah.
Every review has said it's absolutely fantastic. Again, a few things to nitpick at exist. Like, it's not 100% without bugs.
Yeah.
But the bugs don't break the game. So lots of good polish. The game was delayed, similar to Tears of the Kingdom. Overall, came out in an incredibly playable state. And it's such an accomplished game from so many features. Now, I have not been able to play this game. I'm just talking sort of the reviews and other people I know have played it and their reviews. And one thing which I thought was a kind of like a mentality change for me was, don't try to judge a game as, is this the perfect game? But rather, accept the fact that these games are masterpieces. To give an example, IGN, which is one of the world's biggest sort of, you know, agencies which reviews these games, like, they gave both Tears of the Kingdom 10 out of 10. But they acknowledge that they're not perfect. But they are masterpieces. You would be a fool not to play them. And Baldur's Gate 3, similarly, has also received 10 out of 10. Simply put, masterpiece. And it's great that, you know, if you're into gaming, to have such good games in 1 year is great. But it also means that, you know, you don't have to compete against each other. This game's not competing against Zelda. They're both masterpieces, and that should be celebrated.
Yeah, for sure. And another one you mentioned before is Elden Ring, which came out earlier this year, which is, I think, also 10 out of 10. And it's regarded as one of the best games ever. This year, I mean, there was a lot of hype because of the TV series, but Last of Us is memorable. The recently they announced reissue of Red Dead Redemption, of which the sequel is awesome. Like, it's just an incredible game. There's so many games, and I guess we're lucky to be able to play them. And yeah, sure, they have their flaws, as in Elden Ring is just too difficult for me. But at the same time, it's probably a great game. I don't know, because I kept dying at the first level. But
can I point something out, which I think is really interesting?
Yeah.
The games that we've just quoted, The Last of Us, Red Dead Redemption 2, Zelda, both Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, and Baldur's Gate 3, these are all kind of 10 out of 10 games, masterpieces you have to play.
Yeah.
And especially Baldur's Gate 3, which has come out, let's say, just before another highly anticipated game made by Bethesda, which is called Starfield. Just before Baldur's Gate, Diablo 4 came out. Now, both Diablo 4 and Starfield, they're going to be chock full of microtransactions for like skins, for subscriptions, for season passes, the things that everybody hates. Because Baldur's Gate has been so successful in a similar genre to the other games, the developers of these games have come out and said that this should not set the standard for RPGs, because they know they can't compete. And they're saying, no, no, this is an anomaly. You know, games will have microtransactions, and that's what you should be expecting. If you can't make a game as good as them without DLC, without microtransactions, without, you know, play to win mechanics, then you need to up your game, because that's what we want.
Yeah.
And but they're saying like, no, it's an anomaly. Don't get used to this. Your money grabbing mechanics are not what the public wants. It's what we've have to endure.
Yeah, exactly. And people see through that, and people actually praise a game that doesn't have them. I'm guessing the game is also really good, but still.
No, exactly. And it's refreshing to have a game which is complete at time of release, as opposed to how many games were like so buggy when they were released, and, you know, because they're cash grabs and they want you to buy microtransactions, and they want you to do this and they want you to do that. This is refreshing. Like, delay the game if you need delaying, but make it good.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe a change in the trend. Kind of like what we talked in the last episode about movies, that maybe audiences are getting a little bit tired of franchises and cinematic universes and sequels and reboots, and rather prefer a new story or something fresh.
Talking about something fresh, Marco, how was your beer?
Nice, nice. You know what? This beer is amazing. I love it. It's so good. It's, like you said, fresh. You can taste the mountains in it. No, but it's hoppy without being bitter. It's a hint of fruity, tropical. I really like it, man. To recap, it's the IPA from the Big Mountain Brewing Company. I think we should go visit them in Chamonix.
We have to.
We have to. I just really love it. I finished it like halfway through the episode. It was so good. So I'm going to give it a 5.5
Whoa!
Out of a 6-pack. It's really that good.
That's crazy.
Yes, it's amazing. How's your beer?
Okay, I'll admit that it's probably not as good as yours, but I am very pleasantly surprised. And maybe it's because I haven't had an IPA in a long time. But it's so fruity, and it must be because of the hops that they use. It's so fruity that it almost tastes a bit like rose. And I know I might sound really douchey bringing that up, but it's such a fruity beer. Because of that, it's actually gone down really, really well. And I would give it a solid 4 out of a 6-pack.
A solid score. You're back. A
solid score. And it's a good score. Like, I would happily drink this again. I would actually make an effort to buy it if I saw it. No, definitely very good. Very fruity. And I think I like their previous beers as well. So Buxton Brewery, good job. Keep it up. I think that's it.
Aren't you glad you reached to the far end of your fridge?
I know. It was there waiting for me.
Yeah. Good things come to those who wait, says another beer's slogan.
Does this episode need a summary, Marco?
Yeah. Vermouth is terrible, and I hope they get together. And Tears of the Kingdom is amazing. And I hope they keep making more games like this, because it's great.
I think that's it from us, guys. We've had a long one today.
Thank you. Speak to you next time, Des.
See you next time, guys.